there, and thank you for joining us on AVM Alliance, a pediatric stroke podcast for families and friends whose lives have been affected by traumatic brain injury, brain vessel disease, or stroke. The purpose of this podcast is to focus on the kids' side of brain injury with honest talk, news, information, and discussion for our community. Being a parent of a medically complex child is an extremely difficult path to suddenly find yourself on. I'm Raylene Lewis, and my son Kyler suffered a hemorrhagic stroke at age 15. Thank you for joining us. Today, before we jump right into our guest interview, I want to start with a little bit of information about HHT for those who are unfamiliar with this condition. HHT is a genetic disorder in which some blood vessels do not develop properly, and it can occur anywhere in the body. A person with HHT may form blood vessels without capillaries, the tiny little blood vessels that pass in between the arteries and the veins that are usually present. The space between an artery and a vein is fragile and can often burst and bleed much more easily than other blood vessels. Men, women, and children from all racial and ethnic groups can be affected by HHT, and the problems for someone with HHT can be serious and potentially life-threatening. If HHT is discovered early, there are some treatments available. However, there is currently no cure for HHT. I'm sure we have all gone through a time in dealing with either ourselves or someone we love who is feeling sick. Whether we are patient or caregiver, it is extremely frustrating to know something is wrong, but not have a clear course of action of what to do to make things better. This is the story of our guest today, but she went years without the correct diagnosis, and her medical journey, in her own words, offers a lot that we can all learn from. So with me today is Stephanie Zummerling, and she has quite a story to tell.
My story kind of starts before my diagnosis of a brain AVM. I was diagnosed with hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia, which is a genetic disorder, HHT. And then I also was diagnosed with appendix cancer. So I had two very rare conditions. Well, three, if you're talking about the brain AVM as well. So three very rare conditions. And I was misdiagnosed for my entire life, basically. Really, my story started like in maybe high school is like when I started having a lot of symptoms of different things, mostly my appendix, but a lot of like the hereditary, the HHT was starting to come out. And unfortunately, due to my age, I just was always told that it was most likely other things, anxiety, hormonal imbalance, because I was a female.
How did you get it figured out? Because I feel like there are some doctors, there's some really, really good doctors out there. And then there are some who just like automatically jump to conclusions without really considering all the possible options. And it's okay sometimes. I mean, they're just humans too, just like us. It's just that people generally tend to take what doctors say as like the cold hard truth, right? And right. It tends to be really important to get that second opinion on anything that's even remotely serious or anything when it's like, this doesn't really seem to be my problem.
The biggest lesson I had learned was stepping up and getting a second opinion because I trusted my primary care physician for years. I mean, I started having really bad nosebleeds, which is a number one symptom of HHT.
I see, yeah.
And she would just like kind of blow it off like, oh, well, we live in Illinois, so we have dry air. And she would just say, use a humidifier, which we did. And it never made any of it, you know, difference. And over the years, it just like I didn't feel right. I just knew deep down, like in my heart, I just knew something was wrong. And I kept going to her for the same things over and over again, the same problems. And she would give me the same response. And finally, she told me I had anxiety and that it was medical anxiety and that I needed to, you know, she set me up with a counselor, which was great. I started suffering with depression a little bit, but I feel like the depression came after feeling like nobody understood how I was feeling. Like I didn't feel good. I felt sick all the time and nobody was listening to me. Yeah, and we couldn't figure it out.
They said it's all in your head, basically, is what happened.
Yeah. And I was getting nowhere. And I just felt like no matter what I was doing, I was never going to feel like normal. I was never going to feel like good. And so, yeah, I started feeling depressed after a while. And so I went to a counselor. And then as I got older, I went back to her and the pain in my pelvis was getting so bad. And I suffered with migraines, which she just dismissed as hormonal as well. I would get
never
really bad.
Never thought to look in the head, right? Never like.
No, I had never had a scan. Nope. I never had scans ever. The only scans I had were ultrasounds. And actually, going back after my diagnosis of my appendix, they reviewed old past scans and saw that the radiologist actually suggested me having further testing done. Well, the doctors, they never did any like further testing. They didn't do like a CT or anything to like see like what is this. I ended up in the emergency room because my appendix almost burst. They went in for emergency surgery and found out, but my appendix was so enlarged and the tumor was so big that it just mistakenly in an ultrasound looked like my fallopian tube. In the end, it ended up being that I had appendix cancer. Wow. So like I ended up with more of a rare cancer and she didn't even want to look into it. She just believed, you know, what she wanted to believe.
I really relate to what you're saying and that problem, because what most people don't know is that I was born with a small congenital defect. And so I had, this is like, you know, back in the day, even before ultrasound, right? Because I'm old and they would take lots of x-rays. And my mom, my problem was I had your bladder, right? And then you have your kidneys and you have these tubes that go down that are like called ureteroscells that kind of go into the bladder so that like, you know, when you pee, it goes where it's supposed to, right?
Right.
I had a kidney that was malformed incorrectly. And same thing, you know, for that tube. And so I was always crying. I was always, always hurting. And the doctors would tell my mom, oh, she's spoiled. Oh, she's got an ear infection. You should lance her eardrums, like all this stuff. And my mom looked at a x-ray one time and goes, well, what's that? You know, and the doctor goes, oh, that's a gas bubble. That's nothing. Right. Yeah. It turns out it was a tumor like the size of an orange. So for everybody now, which I absolutely love, is that with most doctor offices, you can actually read your own reports. So I always say, you know, when you sign up for that, when like a radiology report comes in, you know, the doctors are going to tell you whatever, but you can look and read the reports yourself. And I think that's a super important thing to do, because I do think that sometimes they dismiss it. And for Kyler recently, he had a test done and we were dealing with a PA because the main doctor was not available. And she called in and said, oh yeah, his blood work came back and he's really iron deficient. So I'm going to prescribe these iron pills, you know, take one a day, you know, or whatever. And so I went and looked at the report. I mean, this was like a month ago, and I looked at it and I was like, he's not iron deficient at all. His price problem is, you know, is this, it's vitamin D, it's not iron. And so I sent her a message and I questioned her and she was like, no, that's what the report said. And I'm like, can you double check and then just reply back to me? And she came back and goes, you're right, I misread the report. You know,
you're like, so, good thing I looked.
Yeah. So I'm saying you always double check. So it turns out that you had a very rare form of a pancreatic cancer, right?
I wish I would have followed up with other doctors. I wish I would have gone and talked to other doctors. I wish I would have looked at those reports of my ultrasounds that they had done in the past. Because even at that point, when she sent me to an OB, I still was misdiagnosed. I didn't think to get a second opinion because I went from a primary to an OB. I was like, oh, those are two doctors and right. They're kind of agreeing. So, you know, it ended up being 8 years later that when I, from like the start to the end, where I ended up just in excruciating pain. I went in for a hysteroscopy. We were trying to get pregnant with my second child and we were having issues getting pregnant. And so we were going to start a fertility journey and they, you know, kept telling me that I might need to have the tube removed, this tube that they thought was blocked for all these years. So they went in, did a hysteroscopy. About 2 days after my surgery, I was in excruciating pain and I was calling the doctor thinking it's got to be related to the surgery I just had. They were telling me to take ibuprofen and I was taking like three of them, which lo and behold, I have an AVM in my brain. So I'm not.
Yeah, I was thinking the first thing that I thought when you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, and she has ADHD.
Yeah. So no, I shouldn't be taking ibuprofen. Terrible advice. But she told me take ibuprofen and basically use a heating pad Well, after 7 days of torture, I finally got the courage to just go to the emergency room. I finally said, I've had enough. But I kept thinking, they're not concerned. I keep calling the doctor and she's not concerned. So finally I went. They did a CT scan. The very first thing, the colon and rectal doctor came in and he was like, you have a tumor on your appendix. And he's like, I'm going to consult with your OB just because you've been seeing this OB for years and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to show him the CT and see if he agrees with me. But this is what I'm thinking. He showed it to my OB and my OB still denied. He still said it was my tube. They wanted to send me home. It was the weekend of 4th of July. They were going to send me home. He was like, your tube is not, it's not an emergency. We can put you on some Tramadol for the weekend. And then after the holiday, we can schedule to have you come in and have the tube removed if it's causing you this much discomfort. I was like, discomfort? They gave me like all the drugs, like fentanyl, like they had to give me it all because I was so...
It hurt so bad.
Yeah, nothing. Like they would give me stuff and like nothing was touching this pain. So I'm like, you're going to send me home with Tramadol? Like what? So then I was thinking I was going home. And then the colon rectal guy came back in and he's like, you're not going anywhere. He's like, I just sat there and reviewed your scan. I watched. He's like, I honestly looked at it all night long. And he's like, no, I'm like 99.9% sure that this is a tumor on your appendix and you're not going anywhere. He's like, if your appendix bursts, one, you could die. Two, yeah. Because you can go septic. And three, if that tumor breaks, it's going to just, you'll be riddled with cancer.
Exactly.
And so thank God he pushed for surgery. Like he was like, I'm not sending you home. You're having it this weekend. They all went in together. It was him and two OBs went in, my OB and then another OB went in. And they came out and yeah. It was my appendix. Nothing was wrong with my tube. They actually had to take out a portion of my colon as well because the tumor had grown into my colon.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, it was a slow-growing cancer. My God.
It was a very... Yeah, thank God. That's what I have is low-grade neoplasm is the diagnosis. But yeah, it's a very slow-growing cancer. So I was able to live with it for all those years. But it did spread, unfortunately. It spread to my diaphragm. And I'm still under watch and wait. Every 6 months, I go for scans now, basically forever. And I had a surgery after I had my daughter about 6 months after. Basically, they're just waiting for the cancer to spread enough that I would need a larger surgery called HIPEC because that's really the only way that they can treat that this type of cancer. It's a heated chemotherapy.
You know, I haven't really talked to anybody about this because I feel so guilty. But Kyler was diagnosed with concussions for sure two, maybe three times prior to us discovering his AVM. And I go back and I think, you know, I kept thinking, really? He has a concussion? You know, like they were like, well, did he hit his head? And I'm like, well, I mean, he was on a mat. He was at a gym. I mean, I guess maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah. But now that I look back, I know that those were bleeds. They were little microbleeds. When I finally went to the doctor, when he didn't remember anything for more than 2 or 3 seconds, you know, was showing all the signs of stroke, even though at the time, you know, as a mom, I didn't even know that a kid could have a stroke. I mean, that was really the first time that I stepped up because the doctor said, you know, they gave him a shot. They gave Kyler a shot and they said, take him home and put him to bed. Where would we be if it haunts me right now, even to say that out loud, to say that. And when I said, can you please come back in the room? Because I don't think this is a migraine. I don't think that your, you know, conclusion was correct. He was so condescending of me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you don't think it's right, you know, you can drive the hour and a half to the hospital and see if they'll do a CT, as if it was like so dumb, right? And then I'm like, yeah, well, maybe I will. That was the first time.
Yeah. And sometimes you do just have to get to that point where you're like, okay, I will then. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
I feel like we put, and I mean, there are amazing doctors. Like, thank God for the colon rectal guy who like looked at my scan, took the time, like his bedside manner was like, I wish he could be my doctor for everything. And so you do, you have these really amazing doctors, but then there's so many of them. And like, we tend to put doctors on these like pedestals,
yes.
Like they're doctors, like they're above us and they know more than us. And like, we have to listen to them. And then the older I've gotten and the more experience that I've gone through, I'm like, I don't have to listen to you. Like, if I don't like your answer, I don't have to be okay with that. And like, I feel like because of like what I've struggled with over the years of like trying to get answers for myself, like, I mean, just my HHT alone, my mom has HHT. She is 74 years old. She had no idea, no idea that she had HHT for all that time. And she suffered a stroke 13 years ago from her AVM in her lung that she had no idea she had. She suffers with nosebleeds. She has AVMs throughout her GI system. So she was having bleeds. She needed transfusions. She had no idea she had HHT. With all of that background, she had no idea. Nobody had diagnosed her. And me and my brother, because it's genetic, so both me and my brother have it. Two of my brothers don't, and then me and my one brother do.
Sure.
None of us knew anything until I finally one day was like, I've had enough. Like, there is something wrong. And thank God, like, honestly, I feel like my appendix cancer was almost like a blessing in disguise. Like, as sucky as it is to have, after I had my daughter, I started suffering from migraines almost daily. And I finally went to my surgical oncologist because he's a doctor that I trust and I like. And I said, something's up. Like, I thought it was hormonal at first because I just had my baby like 6 months ago, but my migraines are just getting worse. Like, something's up. And because of like my history of having cancer at such a young age, he was like, you need an MRI now.
Yeah.
Most likely, if I didn't have my cancer diagnosis, they would have just put me on migraine meds. But because of my history, he was like, we're not messing around. And thankfully they did, because then they found my AVM. When they found my AVM and they called me, I think they were expecting me to say, like, I don't know what an AVM is.
Yeah.
Because most people don't. But I didn't. I said, my mom had a stroke from an AVM 13 years ago. And that's when we started like piecing it together, because they were like, wait, you have an AVM and your mom has an AVM. And then I had an angiogram and they found that I have actually two brain AVMs. And then they did a CT scan on my chest and found that I had two in my chest. And they were like, you absolutely have HHT. And then I went through the genetic testing, and then we were able to get my brother tested, my kids tested. If I didn't push, I would have never got this diagnosis for my family. Like, not just me, but like my kids. Like, when I was a kid, I suffered with my migraines, with my nosebleeds, with, you know, all these issues, with weight loss, with petechia, like where my skin bleeds. And we had no idea what any of this was. And now, like, for my son and for my daughter, who both carry the genetic disorder as well, now I can advocate more for them. I've learned through like what I've gone through that I don't have to like what this doctor thinks. If I want a new doctor or I want them to do another test, like, I just have to tell them.
The way I think of it is, I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy.
There is something wrong. And if you're not listening to me or you're not doing the test, then clearly you are not the right professional for me, because I am not crazy and there is something wrong.
At one point, I finally was like, well, maybe I am making this up.
Yeah, maybe second guess yourself. It's human nature, you know?
Like, yeah, maybe I do have anxiety. I don't know. No, I was never wrong. I've never once been wrong.
Stephanie, thank you so very much for coming and talking to us today and sharing your story and really the story of your whole family with HHT.
No, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. I just hope that by listening to me, it gives parents the courage to seek, you know, second, third, fourth opinions if needed.
You and your family take care. All the best.
Thank you so much. You too.
In Chapter 9 of our focus book, Suffer Strong, Catherine talks about the journey of redefining loss and gain. She believes this journey was never meant to be undertaken alone, but to be wrestled with and learned from alongside other people who are trying to do the same thing. It is natural, she says, to isolate ourselves when we are afraid, or to stop putting ourselves out there when we have lost something precious. And although there is absolutely a time for private grief, community is the scaffolding around the whole process of healing and suffering strong. Today's quote is by Benjamin Spock. Trust yourself. You know more than you think you do. I always like to end our time together with a motivational song recommendation. I don't play the song because of copyright laws, but there have been several times throughout this journey where a song has really spoken out to me and helped me with my day. Today, I'm recommending you check out Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears from the 1985 album Songs from the Big Chair, the Super Deluxe Edition. Welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you. Acting on your best behavior, turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world. And as always, if you have questions, have a topic you would like to hear about, or a great song or motivational quote, don't be shy. Share it in the comments and let us know. And if you liked what you heard today, please go online and rate this podcast. Remember, you're never walking this journey alone. Take care, y'all.